This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, it is NFL Combine Week, Mr. Stephen A. Tasker. Welcome to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And Steve is in our One Bills Drive studios. I am in Athens, Georgia, on the campus of the back-to-back national champion Georgia Bulldogs.
Stop right now. With that.
Stop right now. What?
That's awesome. Yeah, it's good. Congratulations. Yeah. We got to plug them a little bit because they're letting you use their facility, but
yeah, that's right. That's right. They're helping us out big
time.
You tell
Carter that he is the ultimate front runner. Not only did he go, he went like come on, man. That's
the ultimate front runner.
He is the ultimate.
I would like front to call.
Runner.
I would
He's
like
making
to say
life
he
choices.
Very, I would like to say he has very good timing.
He made life choices depending on the success of the football team. That, come on, that's a front
no,
runner.
No, he did not.
He's a front runner. He's a front runner. And he'll always
You're
be
too much,
and he'll
man.
Always be Connor to me. So
yes, we know. We know. But we know that inside joke.
So
he'll always be
so
Connor to you.
Tell
right.
me, is it nice down there in Athens? They got quite the spot, right? I mean,
oh, are you kidding me? This is like picturesque southern scene here.
I mean, like
the buds on the trees are already coming out, Steve. We got another like 6 weeks of winter.
Well, at least six. What about the facilities for the Bulldogs?
Six, right.
Are they like off the charts?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? It's like a country club here.
Is it?
it's unbelievable.
And I'll tell you what.
But I listen to this. Listen to the this is the home of the red and black, but the red and black knows how to roll out the red carpet.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve, I pull up here and I'm looking like where do I park? I don't want to get my rental car towed, the whole thing.
Right.
They got a spot that says reserved for Buffalo Bills on Monday on a barricade outside the athletic complex. I'm telling you, man, they're used to hosting scouts and stuff, you know, to watch players all fall. So this is like, I'm small potatoes by comparison. So
I know this though. You rolled in. They
I wasn't
you
expecting this kind of treatment.
I know.
But
come on,
I'll take it every day of the week.
I know this. I know better than that. You rolled up. They had a parking spot for you. You rolled in like you were the owner of the Bills. I mean, come on. You rocked in like you were
Get
Terry.
The hell.
You're like, oh, yeah, hey, oh, excuse me. I'm here. Where's my spot? Where's my coffee? You go get me a sandwich. Yeah, I know that.
Can I get a cucumber water?
Right. That is awesome. So here's the thing that people forget about, because you go to these schools like Alabama, like, you know, like Georgia, Clemson, LSU, all of them, Notre Dame. The thing that you forget that's so different about these college facilities. Now, they're all great and they're all unique. And they're all off the charts, cool and awesome. But they're also, for like 150 guys, they're gigantic. And you come to the Bills thing, most guys from the pros, from the college ranks, are shocked at how small it is. It's only 50, 60 guys in the room at the most.
Right.
So you come into the Bills, it's more intimate, downsized on the physical scale of it, because, you know, you don't have 80 guys on scholarship and 150 walk-ons, right? It's just, you know, the 85 guys on scholarship, and I mean on under contract, and that's all you got. So the buildings and the facilities are literally cut in half from the size of these Power 5 schools, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's amazing.
And, you know, these guys just redid their whole facility,
I think,
in the last year or two.
Yeah, I heard.
You know, it's big time. College football, man. Big time stuff. And
a former Bill there works for him, right?
Yeah, Jonas Jennings, as we know, is their director of player development. I tried to catch up with him, but Kirby gave the football department like 4 days off. So
nice.
You know, the grinders that are here,
wait.
You know, people like Claude Felton and Leland Barrow in the sports information department are the guys taking care of me.
Wait, you're on first name basis with Kirby Smart? Kirby gave the guys a
No, not me. Not me.
You just called him Kirby.
Not me, man.
That's funny. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what I was told. Kirby gave him some time off here before they reset the clocks and start all over again, just like we do in the NFL.
It's interesting, too, because at the college level, these Power 5 schools, those guys are there through the offseason because they're going to class, right? And they've got all that stuff's open to them. They still feed them. They still train them. They still spend time with them, although, you know, the time is limited by the rules. But those guys are, like, there for months on end, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And they got, you know, the Pro Day coming up. That's the next big event. And, you know, they'll be having the scouting world descending on this campus, like a lot of the other campuses around the country, you know, pretty soon. But not only for, you know, the guys that are going to be in this draft class, as you know, Steve, a lot of times the schools will also allow their junior class that, you know, doesn't declare for the draft to kind of work out. So scouts can get early eyeballs on those guys to almost prepare for the next year of scouting.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's interesting too, that, because that is a big deal. I mean, those guys, can you imagine that? It's like your biggest job interview. And not only is, like, for a school like Georgia, you'll have like the president of the company in the job interview kind of thing. Right. I mean, you got the head coach and the GM, and you got some real, you're not just talking to an HR person. You're talking to the biggest names in the building are watching you specifically. It's pretty cool. And it's a big moment for these guys, and they hone in on it and taper off their training, and everything's focused on that pro day. If indeed they're not going to the combine, some of them do both, obviously, but it's interesting. It's fun too. Now that you're in Athens and we're going to see you tomorrow, you'll be back with us in Indianapolis when we get there tonight.
Right.
We're going to convene on the combine, and some of these Georgia players going to be there.
Oh yeah. 12 of them, in fact. So
yeah, we heard Jalen Carter's not taking
Alabama's
part.
Yeah, well, Jalen Carter, he's going to do interviews and his physical, you know, the medical stuff in Indy.
Right.
But he's doing his workout here at the UGA Pro Day.
Right.
So let's just say that'll be heavily attended. I mean, that guy's going to be off the board by pick three, and that's with that's counting quarterbacks. So,
right.
Yeah. And his teammate, who I think we'd all love to see in a Bills uniform, that left tackle, Broderick Williams. They got him coming off the board at like 15, 16 now. I don't know if the Bills even get a sniff of him at 27.
Is he going to be at the combine, you think, those guys? Or are they just going to do it?
Yes.
What you said, they're going to be there, but they're just some of the guys. And smartly so. I mean, these guys, Georgia guys, all these guys in the SEC, I mean, just look at the tape. You don't need to – I mean, I'll run in the pro day maybe, but, I mean, how much do you need to see these guys? What they really want to do, and we talk about it all the time, is they want to sit down and talk to the kid – And interview them, and then get their doctor's hands on them to, you know, make sure that they're 100% healthy, basically. But they just want to see what kind of guy he is, right?
Yeah, and we kind of started seeing the reports trickling out over the weekend, Steve, about, and mainly the focus, as is always the case, is on the quarterbacks. And so a lot of the NFL Network guys and national reporters were kind of reporting who would be doing stuff, who wouldn't be doing stuff. So the latest right now is Ohio State quarterback C.J. Stroud is going to throw at the combine. Alabama's Bryce Young is going to wait until his pro day. So he's not throwing. And then you got that Florida quarterback, Anthony Richardson, who's kind of a moldable piece of clay, if you like what he has to offer. He's the classic elite physical traits guy, but doesn't have the stats to back him up.
He's the kind of guy
that's
going
to throw,
Josh
do
Allen.
All testing and drills. Right, right. And so, you know, physically gifted kid, but what's he going to be able to show? And then the Kentucky kid, Will Levis, he's going to throw. So that's another top quarterback that's going to go. And then, you know, they look at some of the top pass rushers too, that Alabama edge guy, Will Anderson. He's going to reportedly do some of the on-field work at the combine. And he's been put in the linebacker group as a pass rusher. But then you got that Texas Tech kid, Tyree Wilson. He's supposed to be like a top 10 pick. He's got a fractured foot, so he's not going to do anything.
Right.
Because he's flat out not ready. And then, as I said, Jalen Carter is going to do interviews in his physical in Indy, but he's not going to do any of the workout stuff there. He's going to do it all here in Athens for his pro day.
Right. Now, the quarterbacks aren't.
That's kind of the rundown of the top guys.
Yeah, and as you might expect, they're holding out the money positions until Saturday. We'll be back here in Buffalo, but on Saturday, a week from, you know, on this coming Saturday is when the quarterbacks go. Because they want to put it on the weekend, so maybe some fans will show up and, all of that. Those guys don't throw, the quarterbacks don't throw until March 4th, Saturday.
Yeah.
So that, you know, Young.
It makes sense, you know, have when fans are off of work at the end of the week, maybe you get a better turnout and put the quarterbacks in then.
Right.
That's why they kind of flipped everything. Right. It's always about the quarterback, Steve. We know this, right?
Well, that's the way it is. And I'll say this. We were talking about it today. I think for Bills fans, these last couple of years, except for maybe the Ed Oliver, since the Ed Oliver draft, when the Bills were picking 10, right? Or 10 or 11.
They picked ninth that year, yeah.
Right. That it's like, oh, we're picking 25th, we're picking 27th, we're picking, what, 22nd? We're, you know, people are like.
Rousseau was 30th.
Right. I mean, it's like, this isn't quite as, you know, I don't have like a knot in my throat hoping that E.J. Manuel shows up, right? I mean, we've lived there, man. We were there for a long time. The last time felt it was when Mayfield and Darnold and Josh and Lamar and Josh Rosen come out. We were all waiting on that. That was unbelievable. Now it's like, wow, we feel like you got to feel like the Bills, the Chiefs, the, you know, Bengals, you feel like your core group is pretty much chiseled in stone, right? And now it's like, okay, let's fill in the edges of the roster. Man, that changes everything for a fan base, don't you think?
I would say so, yeah. The Bears might be the exception to that rule because right. Nobody's quite sure what the heck's going to happen there. You see that come down from Schefter this morning?
Yeah, we're there.
The Bears already have been approached by multiple teams about trading out of the first pick, and Chicago is said to be leaning toward moving the pick, which would mean they're banking on Justin Fields going forward. So there's going to be multiple bidders for that with all these teams so thirsty for a quarterback.
And it's interesting, too, because there are some differences in these quarterbacks. You and I think both of us, I'm not going to speak for you, but I like Stroud better than I like Bryce Young.
Yeah.
Just for a number of reasons that, you know, who knows, you know, whether I'm right or wrong. The reasons are irrelevant. I like him better. I've seen some film on both of them. I've watched them both play. The size, the strength of both of them. Seen them make throws. Watched them play. And I've heard read articles written about the two of them. I like Stroud better. And I may be absolutely out of my mind, but that's what I feel like today. I'll have a different opinion tomorrow in Indianapolis when we get there, but all of these teams are going to be the same way.
Yeah, the interesting thing that I was reading about Bryce Young was he has worked very hard to add lean muscle mass to his frame because he knows the biggest concern with his game is his durability because he's 5'11 and 178 during the season. So he's tried to work to put lean muscle mass on for the better part of the last 2 months. And I mean, I don't know how much you can pack on that fast and how much of that you can even consider a natural weight.
Whoa.
I mean, as soon as he starts practicing every day in training camp, that stuff's going to melt right off again, isn't it?
Yes. Now certainly we've seen guys at other positions transform their bodies. Okay. What Bryce Young is being asked to do, what he's purportedly doing and thinking it needs to do, is to put on some weight and make himself more durable. You know, it's you have to be kind of thick to absorb the physical collisions that you're going to get in the pros. I don't know if it's going to be enough. And plus, if you got a guy like Bryce Young and you're looking at a 13 to 15 year career. And normally, on a quarterback for a franchise guy, you're looking 13 to 16-year career, right? A decade and a half. So you're going to tell me from now, because of he's coming out of college now, he's going to try for the rest of his career to be big enough and thick enough and to remain so that he can handle the physical punishments of the position.
Well, not for nothing, Steve. 5'11", 200 is small.
Yeah. And that's 25
previously,
pounds.
Previously, he was tiny. And, I mean, he's not much bigger than me. And, well, I mean, I remember Kyler Murray. There was a big discussion about his durability.
Well, look at Kyler,
the difference
though.
With Kyler Murray is he's got a thick build.
He's very thick.
You know?
He's very muscular. He's packed. And he's very quick twitch. He's different. you're looking at a guy that makes Tua Tagovailoa look like a fullback.
Right.
He is.
Yeah.
He makes Tua look thick and burly. And, you know, I think that's an enormous issue. It's an enormous
issue. Yeah, I worry about it. And not only that, Steve, like, let's just say you're the Indianapolis Colts and you have a shot at Bryce Young. You better get that line fixed in a hurry because that offensive line was terrible last year. It regressed horribly. I know Matt Ryan's lack of escapability was probably a part of that equation, but I mean, they previously had a second round pick in Braden Smith, a first round pick in Quentin Nelson. And I don't know what happened, but it's like the Apple truck overturned there and suddenly they couldn't protect anymore.
Right.
And Matt Ryan looked like a sitting duck because he's, you know, not escaping the pocket at age 39. And that season went south fast. So if you're going to draft a guy where durability is a legitimate concern, you better be beefing up that offensive line to protect him as best as you possibly can.
And they had drafted, remember Quentin Nelson, the draft pick they had as playing left guard, who was a dynamite rookie, was an all-pro as a rookie, was a good, and they paid him, and then all of a sudden he can't play. It's an issue up there, and you've got to have answers for that. They've got to do it right. I mean, you've got to start doing that in free agency. You've got to start signing offensive linemen and getting those big guys in front of him before you ever pick this guy. Even if you end up picking a guy like Will Levis or any of these other QBs, you got to, you know, Anthony Richardson, you know, Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud, take your pick. If you're the Colts, you got to have that offensive line like today, not like next year after his rookie year when he's been sacked 70 times. You know? So.
Oh, I'm with you.
Sometimes they think, well, they got the quarterback this year and they're going to fix the offensive line. No. You know, if you got to pick a young quarterback, start working on that stuff now. And I mean, I mean that's job one. The Bills would have been better off in 2018 when Josh decided they were going to have to play him, if they would have started getting offensive linemen right away. If you knew you were going to get a quarterback, the rest of your draft should have been wide receivers and offensive linemen. And it wasn't, and they ended up, Josh ended up throwing to Kelvin Benjamin and Bob Foster, you know. it's rough. They get there a little bit. Maybe he's a little faster on the development. Maybe he's a little bit healthier. Maybe he doesn't get whacked in the pocket in Houston and he doesn't miss four games. All of that stuff. So, yeah, that I don't know why these teams get caught. They say, we think we got our guy. It's too bad we didn't have an offensive line ready for him when he came in. It ain't that hard. Stop.
They got
drafting safeties and corners and get offensive linemen.
Yeah, they've got work to do there. I mean, they have some building blocks, but they've got some work to do for sure. So, they're at four now. If they move up to get, you know, Young, or maybe they're the trade partner with the Bears.
Well, you know, Carter's going to be there.
You got to think about that too,
right? You got to think there's four guys. If there's four guys there, say it's Stroud, Richardson, Levis, and Young, in no particular order, you know, you're going to get one of them.
Right. I don't know if everybody believes that the value on Levis matches up with top five.
No kidding.
But yes, I know what you're saying.
But if you're going to do that, all you really have to do is switch with one team. One of those teams. And your ability to do that sits much better for the Bears if you're the Colts doing it at number four. And the Bears just, you know, you get this year's one and next year's one and the four pick instead of the 12 pick. You know what I'm saying? So you've got a lot of cash to spend, a lot of assets to get that number one pick if you're the Colts, even if you want it from the Bears.
Carolina at nine is considered another team that might be willing to move up. So they're another potential trade partner. I'd be curious because while you'd say as the Bears, do we want to slide down to nine? The appeal of that is Carolina's got to give up the farm to get up there.
Well, here's the thing, Brownie. What the Bears could do is trade at four, or maybe to Arizona, you know, trade to four with Arizona.
Or Indianapolis.
Yeah, trade with four, to four with Indianapolis, and then trade to number nine with Carolina. And then Carolina gets at least one of those guys. You know what I'm saying?
Trade it
twice.
But if Carolina is hard, if Carolina's determined to get one of those top two guys and they're willing to talk turkey with the Bears, they're going to have to give up a king's ransom. Like, as the Bears, oh, Houston wants to switch places with us. You know, we'll get their one, you know, at pick two, and then we get an extra two and or a three. I mean, you know,
right.
But if you trade with Carolina, you get a one this year, maybe a one next year, and a two also.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, because Houston.
I'll move down eight spots to do that.
Right. Now, does Houston want to flip-flop with Chicago? You know?
It's possible.
Because Houston's
possible.
The number two pick in the draft, for our radio listeners. Houston's the number two pick in the draft. Chicago's number one. And Carolina could jump up and get the number two pick. You know? Arizona is
number
three.
Well, yeah, but Houston at two, with Houston at two, they're like, why would you want to move up? And it's like, well, you got to worry about somebody leapfrogging you and getting
right.
your guy.
That's right.
So that's the incentive for them to try to go up to the top.
If you want the guy you want, there's only one place to go, and that's the first pick
guaranteed.
Of the draft. Yeah, that's the first pick of the draft. Because even if the Bears are saying we're going to trade out of it, we like our guy now, and draft day comes and nobody trades for it, they'll take, you know, boom, they take C.J. Stroud. They don't, you know.
Yeah.
They lied. Oh, my gosh. In a competitive field,
well,
they
right.
lied. That, you know, so.
Remember the Browns in the 18 draft, everybody thought they were taking anybody but Baker Mayfield. And then all of a sudden, in the 11th hour, we're hearing, oh, my God, the first pick's going to be Baker Mayfield. Not that worked out for them, but.
Yeah, well,
you know what I'm saying? And that's the other thing that I'm wondering here too, Steve, because that year we saw a lot of movement at the top for the quarterbacks. We know that the Jets traded up from 6 to 3. The Bills on draft day moved up from 22 to 12 to 7. I wonder how quickly some of these quarterback-hungry teams pull the trigger. Do they pull the trigger as soon as free agency's over in late March, mid-April, or does it happen just days before the draft? Like, who strikes first? Because remember, the Colts and the Jets swung that deal between 3 and 6. It was like, I want to say 2-3 weeks before the draft even happened.
Right.
Back in 18 to get Darnold.
Right. It was pre-draft. And I can't. But we've got all the teams that are in the market, the guys we've been talking about, the Houstons, Carolina, and Indianapolis, you know, to name just three. Don't forget, Las Vegas is in the market as well. So mm-hmm. is probably who? You think San Francisco's in the market? You think the Jets are in the market? All these teams are out there looking for somebody. Houston. There's still Derek Carr, Aaron Rodgers, Jimmy Garoppolo, go down the list of guys that are going to be available. And some of them are, you know, I'm in the Baker Mayfields and the Sam Darnolds of the world that may be even under contract and maybe not by draft time. All these stuff could change by draft time. It might be interesting. It might be a better study, Brownie, to find out which teams we think have got their guy but are still doing the work on these quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, everybody does their due diligence regardless for, you know, obvious reasons. But really, free agency and trades is going to be the first game of musical chairs with the quarterbacks this offseason. And then once the music stops there, they wait till the music starts going into the draft. And that's the second game of musical chairs with the quarterbacks and jockeying for position in the draft order. So that's now we know why quarterbacks are always front and center this time of year, because they draw eyeballs. And they make headlines, and they're going to do it again this spring.
Right. I mean, there's still a chance that, I think it's a minuscule chance that Aaron Rodgers gets traded from the Packers. That would throw a wrench into everything as well. Derek Carr is out there. The Raiders need a quarterback. Garoppolo's going to be out there. Carolina's got a couple of guys or had a couple of guys on their roster, and Mayfield and Darnold, and they don't want either one of those guys. Who else is out? I mean, there's a ton of guys. So that's got to settle down before we got to get an idea. Because let's face it, if Indianapolis signs Jimmy Garoppolo, they're not going to draft a guy. Right? If Derek Carr goes to the Jets,
well,
the
yeah,
Jets
but
aren't
we already
draft a guy.
We already heard Jim Irsay say, well, that Bryce Young looks pretty good. And meanwhile, his scouting department and GM Chris Ballard are like, did he just say that out loud in public?
Yeah, let's put that on a long list of things that Jim Irsay has said. So,
yeah, right.
But Houston is definitely in the market for one of those guys. And if you're the Green Bay Packers, and you can make a trade with the Houston Texans, Aaron Rodgers for the number 2 pick, plus whatever package they put together or whatever it is, that changes the entire complexion of this draft, right?
Yeah, you can't forget Seattle too, because that's Geno, right? Smith's a free agent.
Geno's
like,
a free agent.
I think they're going to re-sign him, but even if you do, is he your long-term answer there?
Even if they
put together a nice season, but
they could always just franchise him, just like the Baltimore Ravens are going to do with Lamar. They just franchise him and go with that. So Geno doesn't necessarily hit the market, and I don't know how many teams would be standing in line for him, even after the great year he had. But this is interesting situation in the league, around the league, with where these guys are going to land and how it affects this draft order, particularly at the top.
Yeah.
Levis is going to go long way before his draft status of, what is it, like a day 2 pick for Levis?
No. I think they've just got him lower in the first round, I think.
Well, okay, so he'll go
a little
in the
bit
top
lower
half.
Than those top 2 guys.
He'll go in the top half. You know he will.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Probably will. Before we get into today's topic of discussion, Steve, concerning the Bills, NFL Competition Committee got started over the weekend. They're wrapping up today. I think today's their last day of meetings. And our friend of the show, NFL Network's Judy Batista, was all over it over the weekend. So they're meeting again today. Health and safety briefing is the focus, along with issues like field surfaces, concussions, injury rate on special teams, and the hip drop tackle, which has become the in vogue tackle technique that might be ruled illegal because of the potential for injury. We saw the tackle made by Arden Key in the playoffs that injured Patrick Mahomes. Well, I guess anytime the face of a franchise suffers a major injury in a playoff game, it's going to draw attention.
Well, what it is the hip drop tackle, if nobody knows what they're talking about, they used to use the horse collar tackle, where a guy would reach in, grab a real good handle on the guy's neck collar, which is a really nice place to grab and hold on, and then lift your legs and swing your body underneath the guy into the back of his legs. And it was a good way to hurt guys. I mean, it's a great way to tackle, and guys, you know, were getting hurt because of it. The hip drop tackle is the exact same thing, except that what it is they're telling you is you can't grab the guy like around the waist and then drop your hips across the back of his legs to get him down. It's just one more way that it's going to allow running backs, wide receivers, and quarterbacks to break tackles. It's just not going to be able to – you're not going to be able to – there's just so many ways you're not allowed to tackle anymore. That's why, you know, every year we have a couple of weeks during the season where we get a bunch of callers and old guys like me call in and go, they're not tackling well. They stink. The game's not, you know, they just don't know what they're doing. They don't teach you. They're soft, whatever. But the simple fact of the matter is they're not allowed to do it anymore. So, you know, these guys are, you know, that's why you see guys tackling the ball instead of the man. You know, they reach in and try and wrench the ball out instead of tackling the guy's legs or whatever, and they give up an extra 7 yards on a 2-yard run because they aren't allowed to tackle like they should. They can't knock the guy off his balance because they can't lead with their head or their shoulder. So this is just one more rule that's going to happen. And I imagine, you know, it'll pass, because if they don't pass a player safety rule and some guy goes and gets a hip drop tackle and snaps his femur, he's going to retire and live on the NFL's money for the rest of his life, you know, because they didn't take care of him. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I hear you. We'll get into some of the other things that the competition committee is mulling over here in their meetings a little bit later on in the show. We do want to pass along to you our topic of discussion today. What are you hoping to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the NFL Combine this week? We'll have him on our show this week as well, coming up once we get out to Indy. What are you hoping to hear from him? A lot of decisions need to be made with respect to their own free agents. Decisions need to be made about pick 27 and the ones that come thereafter, and fill in some holes on this roster. We've heard from fans the last couple of weeks, Steve. Offensive line, wide receiver, the safety position is suddenly a position that has Micah Hyde and nobody else under contract that we definitively know is playing next year. Damar Hamlin's under contract, but we don't know what his future status is. So it's Micah Hyde and fill in the blank. So what do you need to hear from the GM of the Bills this week at the Combine? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free number to get on board, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Steve and I take a break here, but your phone calls coming up next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and taking your phone calls at 803-0550. That's the local 716 number to call. Otherwise, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, as we are asking you, what do you need to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the Combine this week? We'll have him on the show this week out in Indy, as Steve and I are headed out there for the show tomorrow through Friday, 1 to 3 o'clock all week long, so be sure to tune in to get the latest goings on in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine with us. I don't know if I have anything as a top thing on my list that I'd like to hear from Brandon, Steve. I guess we all assume that a plan will be in place with obvious contingencies, because you always need contingencies. Heck, look what happened last year. I mean, suddenly Von Miller's available and interested in playing for the Bills, and that turned the whole offseason plan on its ear. So they'll have a plan going in, and then they'll just have to pivot based on how things shake out with regard to that plan.
That's right. And I think mostly what I want to hear from him is stuff we don't know and would love to find out. Like, what are their priorities? And when we talked about O-line, we've talked about safety, we've talked about some extra weapons for Josh, the whole nine yards. I want to know what he's thinking. What's on his plate this week? Who's he going to talk to? I don't know if we'll ever get a definitive answer, because they'll probably talk to so many guys we don't have room to write them down. But I really want to know where they're at in free agency. I want to know how they're getting lined up for this draft. Certainly the overall philosophy probably has not changed, because it's been so successful for them. They want to fill up their entire roster with as good of veterans as they can find, quality guys with – either older guys on short deals that are highly motivated, maybe have some gas in the tank, or young guys that have an upside that they can develop into maybe a real starter and give them a longer-term deal. But that they're going to fill up the roster, all the offensive linemen, they're going to fill up the defensive line, they're going to fill up the wide receiver room, they're going to get a bunch of safeties under contract, and all that stuff in the next couple of weeks. Well, in March 17th, 15th when it starts, free agency.
15th, yeah.
When the 15th.
It's coming up fast.
Right. Like, it's like in 2.5 weeks. So if I want to know those guys, he's not going to tell us who they are, but I want to know that's the philosophy. That's what's gotten them to this point where they're a perennial favorite to go the distance. Who fits into that this year? Because there's going to be a ton of names that we don't know yet.
Right, because nowadays, now that they've pushed the combine into the first week in March, these clubs come back from the combine, you know, they get back to their facilities. Free agency starts in a week.
Yeah.
It's almost like you got to have that plan in place before you even go to the combine. Now, granted, they're going to meet with some player agents for some of their prospective free agents to kind of kick the tires on, hey, this is our value for your guy. What do you think? Do you think we might be able to find some middle ground here and get something done? Or if they're way off, they're like, all right, well, cross that off the list. We're going to have to go to plan B on that position group. You know, those kinds of things kind of get ironed out at the combine, even though the college prospects are kind of front and center for what everybody sees on NFL Network through the course of the week. But that's why we're asking you what you need to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the Combine this week. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. Leading us off today is Dave in Amherst. What you got for us, Dave? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. Love the show. If you don't mind, I'd like to back up just a day or so. I'm a little behind here. I wanted to say this for a while now, and I'm sure you've heard it before. I have yet not to hear you guys, you sports commentators all across the board, I don't care what station it is, you've all said and agreed that the game is won and lost in the trenches. And, yeah, I know you've heard it before, but here's my opinion, and I'm hearing impaired, so you can come after me if you want when I hang up. Obviously, if you have a front four on the offense who can – elite players who can protect the quarterback in open holes, you've got an offense. And commensurately on the other side of the line, if you can stop the run, obviously. Front four, both sides of the ball, and here's my take. I don't care who we have to – or what we have to do other than to protect Josh. He stays. We need to get that front four on both sides of the ball first. You build a foundation, and then you build a house. Okay, I'm going to hang up now, and you guys, I would love to hear your response. And that's number one. To hell with the running backs and all that. Get the line first. Thank you.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call.
Well, Dave, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many ways we can slice. I thought we were in total agreement before you called. I don't know if Brownie feels the same way. We've been talking about it for a long time. Now, here's one reason why we don't put as much emphasis on it as you have is because we feel like, at least on the offensive side of the ball, the cupboard is not completely bare. Deion Dawkins, a very good left tackle. Mitch Moore's been as consistent and as trustworthy and quality and as athletic as any center in the league. Certainly there's some holes there on both guards sides of the center right now. And Spencer Brown had an inconsistent year, and people are kind of looking at him sideways thinking, is his third year going to be one where he takes off? So that's one reason we're not saying draft seven offensive linemen in this draft. The defensive line, same thing. I think they had a top-quality defensive line this last year when they were healthy. But it was a group and a year when the entire roster was riddled with injuries like they hadn't been in 3 or 4 years. So that was a difference. Now, when they were healthy, the Bills were right there this last year. And their record proved it, and their play on the field proved it. I would be shocked if Brandon Bean didn't see things the same way all of us do. So I don't know. Dave, you're right. And you say you love the show, but if you had to say that to us, I don't know how much you've been listening. I got to be honest, because we've been talking about it.
Well, we've been banging the drum for offensive line help, and a lot of the callers that have called the show have kind of reacted similarly.
Yeah.
And I think here's the good news, okay? And granted, you can take this with a grain of salt, but Daniel Jeremiah, who we're going to have on the show this week as well, just released his top 50 prospects, his latest edition of his top 50 prospects. He had about 5 or 6 new players added, which obviously means 5 or 6 dropped out, and he rearranged the order a little bit. I think the good news is this, Steve. Prospect number 23. Tennessee right tackle Darnell Wright. Prospect number 24, Georgia tight end Darnell Washington, the huge kid. Prospect 25, Jackson Smith and Jigba, the Ohio State wide receiver. Prospect 26, Jalen Hyatt, Tennessee wide receiver. Quentin Johnston, TCU wide receiver, number 27. And then he's got Zay Flowers in there, the receiver from Boston College. He's got the best center in the draft at 31, John Michael Schmitz. He's got one of the best guards in the draft, Osiris Torrance from Florida. And then he's got your guy, who's an interior lineman from Wisconsin, Joe Tippmann at 33. Bottom line here, he's even got the TCU guard, Steve Avila, at 35.
Right.
There are going to be very good offensive line options down around where the Bills pick at 27. So it's good that there are some top flight quarterbacks in this draft class. And it's good that there are some top flight pass rushers in this draft class, because those guys will push players like we're discussing here down to where the Bills can take one of those guys off the board and improve their offensive line, conceivably.
There's also, I mean, I've got a cursory list here of, you know, there's center guards. It was like Edgerton Jenkins from Green Bay, Ben Powers from Baltimore, we've spoken about, Isaac Seumalo from Philly, Dalton Risner from Denver, Evan Brown from Detroit, and then tackles, free agent tackles, you got Mike McGlinchey, Orlando Brown, Jack Conklin, Caleb McGarry from Atlanta, Juwan Taylor from Jacksonville. There's going to be some guys in the NFL, and these guys all have some chops. I mean, they're not guys who were
right.
These are not guys who were on the practice squad of, you know, of Houston. These are guys that are playing significant snaps for their clubs. Those are right guys are going to be available in free agency, plus guys that we don't know about that who may be playing behind these guys for these other teams, you know. So there's going to be a ton of guys out there who can really play. There's a bunch of centers out there as well. If you're not a fan of Mitch Morse, Ethan Pochick, Connor McGovern, Garrett Bradbury, Bradley Bozeman, Austin Blythe, all these guys are centers who could come in and probably play center or guard. So all these names plus the draft that you're talking about, there's going to be some guys out there. The question is, can you get them to sign here? Can you get them in for the price that you can fit under the cap as a top 53 player, 51 player, and make it work? Certainly,
yeah.
The where the Bills are right now with Josh, Steph Diggs, Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, all of these guys that we've talked about, this is a destination that guys want to play for, and they want to come in and win. Some of these guys are from teams that didn't make the playoffs and haven't made the playoffs a lot in their careers, and they want a shot at that. That's an issue, too. That's just like Vaughn. Vaughn Miller wanted to come in and have a chance to go for it. Those names, all these names and all these prospects we're talking about are on the table for the Bills. The only question is finances. Can they fit them in the cap? And will they sign here?
Right. And that's why I would be inclined to think, as far as free agency goes, they would probably go the guard route, because guard doesn't cost as much as tackle. And we know in free agency, you typically overpay. And their cap situation, I don't think, affords them to overpay at the tackle position. So I'd be inclined to think they sign a guard in free agency, and then, heck, they might draft a tackle slash guard in the draft early. Or a guard center. You know, someone with some kind of position flexibility, because like that's the in vogue thing now, position flex.
Yeah, like that kid Tippmann from Wisconsin, and, you know, that's my man crush for the minute.
That's your guy. Yeah.
He's played, I think, center or guard for Wisconsin. I think he played center for Wisconsin. The guy's 6'6 and weighs three Bills plus. So he could play tackle. He's long enough and sturdy enough if he could play tackle frame-wise. Now, I don't know if his feet will allow him to play tackle, or if his length and his arm reach will allow him to be effective at tackle, but certainly he's got the height for it. And guys like that coming in, you don't know what their upside is really until you see them at this combine, get a look in their eye and talk to them and find out if you can put me anywhere you want, coach, let's go.
Yeah.
Those kind of guys give you some confidence that they're going to give it their best shot.
All right, we got to take a break here, but when we come back, more of your phone calls and thoughts on the tweet sheet on what you need to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the NFL Combine this week. We will be there Tuesday through Friday all week long, giving you the ins and outs on what's going on in Indy, including comments from Brandon Bean himself. What do you want to hear from? You let us know. We'll take your phone calls next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, taking your phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, as we are asking you what you need to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the NFL Combine this week. There's obviously a lot on his to-do list. You want him to come out and say what? I don't know, maybe it makes you breathe a little bit easier about what the roster is going to look like next fall. Maybe it's something else entirely. You let us know. Open line for you at 803-0550. Steve, there were a couple of other tidbits from the competition committee meetings that I wanted to run past you because I was curious for your thoughts on these. Data points from the 2022 season. Fewer deep passes are being thrown. Second fewest INTs per game in league history. Those two are probably tied together. And more balls being thrown away. Also, more conservative play in the first and third quarters in terms of rushing more and fewer downfield shots. The Bills' style of play kind of flew in the face of some of that, I think, based on what we saw this year.
Right.
What do you make of those? I don't think we're surprised at all after seeing what Burrow and Mahomes did in the passing game this past year.
No, I mean, I think it's exactly the same thing that we see in defensive run stop. And it's about the ball. For defenses, they do everything they can to force turnovers. They tackle the ball, they grab the ball and try and wrench it out of the guy's hand, and they lose balance and they go down. That's how you make a tackle these days. Same thing with quarterbacks. Throw it away, live to fight another down. Punting is not the worst thing in the world. Throwing a pick is. Running backs getting benched if they fumble the football. I mean, that's almost commonplace now. Coaches will not put up with it. You got to protect the football at all times. The league has forever fought against cheap fumbles in the pocket. Now they're kind of into it. They hope the defensive lineman can swat it. If the ball's loose in their hand, even if the ball goes forward, if they don't have a good grip on it, it's a fumble. So they're doing that. It's all about possession of the football. And when it comes down to the most risky thing you can do offensively, and that's throw it, they're coaching these guys to be as safe and smart as they can. Take the easy completion, throw it away, make them cover the whole field without threatening the whole field. You know, we have no intention of throwing it deep, but get those guys out of there, clear it out so we can hit it underneath.
Yeah.
I mean, it all works into making sure that you can play as highly efficient as you can. And it looks that way. And that's why the Bills, I think, stand out. And why some of the Bills fans, even us, you and me, Brownie, were like, man, we throw it deep too much, right?
Yeah.
We go through these
stretches.
I love
the deep ball as much as the next guy, but can we dial it back a little bit?
Right. We like, dude, just hit motor on the check down, you know? We were talking like that through the entire season. Now the Bills were still winning games. They were doing it, you know, different. But all these other teams, you can't get them off the field unless somebody drops a pass, you know? So I think those numbers are borne out in what you see with just the regular casual fan can see, man. They just don't put the ball at risk offensively.
Right, and the Eagles did it in a much different way. They used a running game and a strong offensive line and a good defense to kind of stake themselves to leads, which then negated the need to have Jalen Hurts throw it all over the field in the second half. You had that stat that you ran out on us right around Super Bowl week that Jalen Hurts had 22 pass attempts in the second half all season.
That's when he didn't have the lead.
A shockingly anemic number.
He had 22 pass attempts in games for the entire regular season, going into the playoffs. For the entire regular season, he had 22 pass attempts for the whole year in the second half of games where they did not have the lead. He only threw it 22 times in the second half of a game when he didn't have the lead. You and I were throwing darts at the difficulty of their season from the get.
Yeah, not a lot of adversity.
They played a flower bed of a schedule. I mean, it couldn't have been better for them. From the quality of their division to the quarterback play that they faced, 10 of their 17 quarterbacks they faced were journeyman at best, if not last resorts.
Yeah, bottom half of the league.
Last resorts for every team they played. These guys they were playing were the last resort. They were the guy. They were like, this is the last guy we got. And they had to play again.
Quarterback they played in the regular season is now the quarterback's coach for the Denver Broncos, Davis Webb.
Think about it. That says it all. So you and I were poking holes in that, but that's the way they did it. And that's what it took to win games. And, you know, bless their heart, they did exactly what it took to get them there. And they had the Chiefs leaning on the ropes in the 15th round, swinging at them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, That's what happens when you find a quarterback, when you finally see a quarterback that can, you know, pull a rabbit out of a hat whenever he wants to.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break here, but hour number two, we are wide open for your phone call. So Dave in Florida, Mark in West Seneca, stay right where you are. We'll get to you when we return and begin hour number two here on a Monday, NFL Combine Week. What do you need to hear from Brandon Bean? You let us know. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we go. Hour number two on a Monday of NFL Combine Week. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we're going to go to the phones here in just a second as we've been asking you today, what do you need to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the Combine this week? Certainly, he's got a very long to-do list, a cap situation that has to be brought into compliance before the start of the league year. What moves need to be made to do that? Prospective free agents, who has a chance of being re-signed and coming back? Prospects and where the holes will be come draft month that will still need to be filled after free agency is over for the most part. 803-0550, the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550, the toll-free number if you're outside the calling area. We lead off hour number two with Dave in Florida. What do you got for us, Dave?
How you doing, fellas? I have a question.
Good.
Does the NFL have scouting or anything to do with the XFL?
They do
and
not.
The reason I ask, they do not?
No.
Oh, because I watched a couple of games during the week here.
Right.
I see some pretty big guys on these offensive, defensive lines. So we can't touch them. Is that it?
Yeah.
Well, they don't stand in the way. I don't think they would necessarily stand in the way of a player with an opportunity for an NFL contract. But I think they do have to finish out the season.
Yeah, depending on what their contract is.
Right.
I think those guys, the XFL, can sign with anybody they want, but they'll probably have to fulfill their contract with whatever XFL team there is. The thing you have to remember, too, is those guys were all available to the NFL before this season was over. There's no question that the NFL teams, the Bills included, have guys not only watching those games, but looking at the film, studying the film. And before those guys ever became XFL players, they were on the radar of the NFL because they came out of college at some point and were in the market for the NFL. So the clubs have a file on all of those guys, on every roster, on every team, at every position. So you can bet that if there's somebody in there that they're intrigued by, and there certainly probably are, more than a handful of players, the Bills are like, well, man, I wish we could get this guy. But for whatever reason, they didn't have the rights to him or couldn't get him signed or were too full at the moment in time when they were available. So it's really that simple. All those guys are in the pool of signable players for the Bills and other NFL clubs.
Yeah, and I think that NFL scouting departments will keep a very close eye on players in that league and who looks better in week eight than they did in week one. Who really came along and developed and improve their game when they finally did get some game reps, which is something that a lot of those fringe guys in the NFL never really get the opportunity to put into practice, literally in practice or in games, because they're not active on game day. So the XFL and, you know, come April, the USFL are going to give guys like that opportunities to improve their game by getting real live game reps. And I think the NFL as a whole welcomes it. Because, Steve, I know you and I have been around long enough to know what a benefit NFL Europe was to groom players and develop them into NFL caliber players that eventually came in and helped football teams. Fred Jackson being probably the best Bills example.
There's not a ton of guys that are going to come in and all of a sudden become all pros and Pro Bowl players, although there might be a couple of Pro Bowl players. You're not going to come in from the XFL usually and all of a sudden become an all-pro player. But you can go from being a guy who's not good enough to a guy who is good enough to play and to have a roster spot and to get some reps at a team and maybe to continue to get better. The spectrum of where guys fall in the talent level and the way they can play is as big as you can imagine. Some guys, it takes a long time, and by the time – and for instance, Kurt Warner, it took him a long time to develop into the quarterback who came in was a three-time MVP and a two-time Super Bowl champion, a three-time Super Bowl participant with two different clubs, and was a Hall of Fame player. He was like 28 when he made the roster for the Rams. It took forever for him to develop. There are guys like that out there at different positions. But for whatever reason, they're like going, man, I'm done with this. You know, I'm never gonna make $25 million as a quarterback. Whatever. So they're like, I'm gonna go on with my life. There's a lot of that going on. And then there's some guys who want to stick with it, and will probably get there, and then all of a sudden they get an ACL, now it's over. So the whole menu of possibilities, both guys coming and becoming good enough to get in the NFL and who will never make it or just kind of hanging on the XFL, it's all there. And it's up to the pro personnel departments of the NFL to sift through all of that and find the ones that can help them. It's that simple. It's that complex. And it's a long process for it to happen, and it takes a lot of commitment by a player who may or may not see light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Mark in West Seneca is next. What do you got for us, Mark?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Before we get going, hey, Steve, how much fun was yesterday, huh? Go Sabres.
Oh, man. It was great. I didn't go to the game, but my son took my grandson there, and they ran down to the glass, and my grandson threw his hat over the glass when Dylan Cousins did the hat trick. They both threw their hats
on the hat trick.
Yeah, so something my grandson is never going to forget it because he and his dad threw their hats onto the ice for Dylan Cousins' hat trick. So pretty cool. Couple of fights. The other goalie busted his stick over the net. We had a lot of explaining to do to my 4-year-old grandson about why that's happening and who won the fight kind of thing. But yes, that was a great day. It's a great day.
Yeah, I was there. I was actually there with my son, too, and it's funny you should say that about the hats because my son's 23, and we're standing there, and Cousin scores, and my son looks at me, and he goes, I'm throwing this hat. I says, I don't ever do that. He says, I'm throwing it, and he throws it out there, and he looks at me, and he says, I forgot I paid $38 for that hat.
I'm the kind
I'm
of
with
the
you,
way.
Mark. I'm not throwing it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wear a hat to every Sabres game. And I would throw it, but I go through hats a lot because if I'm wearing a hat, like I need a new hat because I've worn the same hat last couple of times and they got their heads caved in both times. They were horrible games that I went to see the last couple of times. So I was looking for a reason to throw that hat. I didn't get a chance to, so I'm going to get a new hat anyway.
But I wear a hat because I'm bald. I have to. So, But anyway, what I called about real quick is I'm taking up all your time here. A couple observations. You guys mentioned a competition committee. And these are a couple things I've been wanting to ask you guys to get your opinion for a while. First of all, replay. It drives me crazy. Every year it gets more convoluted. And they told us they were putting this in order to get the plays right. But yet they allow teams to rush to the line of scrimmage and quickly snap the ball so a replay can't be done. And why can't they institute a rule that at the whistle to end a play, they get a certain amount of time, 20, 25 seconds, either team, to throw a challenge flag, just so you can eliminate that enticement to basically cheat.
Because enticement, I'll tell you why, Mark, because the enticement goes both ways. If it's offense, they got to take a chance that they're going to throw the flag, and it's just as much of an enticement. If you get up and I saw this happen. if the offense goes up there and hurries, it's just as much of an enticement, an indictment on them that they got a receiver over there giving them a hand signal that says, hey, listen, I didn't catch that. You better snap it fast. That would be an automatic flag toss for some teams. They're going to throw it anyway because the guy doesn't think he caught it himself. And then all you're looking for is the right camera angle to confirm it. Plus, it's a risk, too. If they rush up and run a play, it's not going to be the perfect play. It's going to be the play they have at the top of their list. They're just going to run a play, and it's an easier defensive play for the defense on a play that may or may not be overturned. So it's a double-edged sword. If a team wants to hurry up and snap the ball, it's just as much a risk for them as it is for the defense of them giving a play away that may have been overturned, as is for the offense, taking a play that's not going to be their best play on first down of the next series. So, plus, it never happens on a scoring play. They always have plenty of time on a scoring play to refute it, or to they all get overturned or reviewed. And they also have a sky judge that, if it's clear and obvious, is going to overturn it anyway. So there's that.
That's what I was going to say, Steve. That's the practice that they added to the equation to try to get a quicker adjudication as to just what happened by going to a guy upstairs that's watching everything on 12 cameras and has a much better vantage point than the guys on the field. So he tries to make a quick decision and say, oh, and he'll buzz down and say, let's don't run that next play yet. We got to take a look at this.
And the offense gives something up on their next first down when they hurry. They can't change personnel, because if they change personnel and you want to look at it, you can just relax, tell your replacement guy, because you can match personnel with them. If they run a guy on and run a guy off, you get a chance to match that substitution. So if you want to take your time and have your extra linebacker stumble and fall on his way out, or just kind of heel to toe, or just kind of scuffle his way out there and take an extra 15 seconds to go out there and take his place, the officials are going to hold the game up. So there's plenty. It's on both sides of that, Mark. I get what you're saying, but there's enough. I think there is enough, I don't know, cushion or margin of error on both sides for them to keep it the way it is, particularly with the sky judge looking at everything. And the beauty of the sky judge is he's always looking at every play all the time, and he's all talking to the official, and the officials don't announce it. He says, we looked at it, and we got the spot wrong by 2 yards. We're going to move it back 2 yards. They don't even talk to you about it. They just do it. And the sky judge gets it right. There's a lot of that going on as well, and that's been a huge boost to the game. And I know we're going to talk about it in a minute, but they also wanted to – it was proposed by a team this year to make roughing the passer reviewable.
Yep.
Nobody's got the stomach for it. It's going to fall by the wayside. Nobody wants to do it for whatever reason. I don't know why that is, but nobody wants to do it. So that's not going to happen.
It's just another layer that you got to deal with.
Yeah.
And then you have to think about the unintended consequences and all the stuff that you got to run through to make sure if it's worth it or not. Because they're saying the committee right now doesn't support making roughing the passer reviewable. It could still go before the full ownership, though, at the March meetings for a vote, unless it's withdrawn. Now, hopefully the competition committee just says, that's a nice proposal, but we're going to withdraw it. We're not putting that before ownership. They also taught this. This was the one I found most interesting, though, Steve. The committee discussed sideline hits. When is a runner considered completely out of bounds? Because we saw some plays involving the Bills themselves where things were pretty close as to whether Josh got hit illegally out of bounds. We saw the play in the AFC title game at the end with Joseph Osai hitting Mahomes out of bounds. That was kind of a clear one. But when is he considered out? So still in the field of play, they were talking about if a runner has 2 feet in the white, that is out. Anything else, including 1 foot in bounds and the other one in the air, is still a live run. But if 2 feet are in the white, he's out. Anything short of that, okay, he's still in.
What if it's 1 foot on the white, 1 foot in bounds? You know? What if it's only 1 foot out of bounds and the other one in the air?
Yeah, they didn't include that. Let me see here. Right? If runner has 2 feet in the white, that is out.
Of course.
Anything else, including 1 foot in bounds, 1 foot in bounds, he's still in, still a live run.
What are the, yeah, okay. What so if he's one got foot, 1 foot on the white one, and 1 foot in the air?
He's got one.
See what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not completely clear here. Now, granted, I pulled that from a tweet.
Oh.
So,
yeah.
Judy Batista only had 240 characters to make it make sense.
Judy's killing us.
Maybe the full write up. We'll have to look at the full write up to see exactly what
we're gonna have.
Is in and
well,
what
here's
is
the
out.
Thing. All
right, so not only are we not gonna know what a catch is in this league, we're also not gonna know who is in bounds or out of bounds anymore either.
Let me just say this. I will go on I'll say this. When Dean Blandino was the head of officiating the NFL, we all knew what a catch was. It was only when some other guy was doing it that got all murky. Because he just
yeah,
he had
I actually
odd,
watched him yeah. in action because the XFL is showing that he's there.
XFL uses
officiating, and they actually mic it all up so you can hear his communication to the official down on the field, and it's very straightforward, very black and white, and off they go. And it was very refreshing to see that. I was actually encouraged to see that kind of efficiency and. Can only hope that the NFL can do the same or does the same on a weekly basis. Incidentally, they did say that the committee did meet, and what they did was spent 90 minutes discussing officiating. The biggest question was how to get more consistency across all crews in the league, because as we know, some are invariably better than others. But Troy Vincent did say the committee was pleased with the level of training
right.
for officials.
Well,
so
better or not. You got some officiating crews that are calling 20 penalties a game and others that are calling 6 or 8 penalties a game.
Yeah.
And for the same teams, you know what I mean? So that's the thing. And I'm not saying you have a quota of penalties you got to call. I'm just saying call the same thing, the same way, the same game, and in the other game too, and week to week. That's why the NFL is as good as it is. We expect that, and that's the standard. Is as much as I love the Sabres, this ain't hockey. You know, fourth quarter mm-hmm. and overtime are the same as the first quarter of the preseason. You call it, and it stands, and that's the way it should be. Don't the gray. You don't want any gray area. You want it all black and white, from the catch to the out of bounds, to the tuck rule. It's got to be black and white. And when it's not, that's when you have an issue. That's all we want. That's all the players want. I've told you that. If it doesn't matter if they made it legal for everybody to carry a baseball bat while they're playing football. Because I'll tell you what, there'd be 22 guys out there carrying Louisville Sluggers around on them. You know, that they're gonna play within the rules. And if you say now everybody has to play barefoot, guys would be selling their feet as signage. Their bare feet, you can tattoo my foot with your logo. I mean, you know, they would. They'd do it.
Where are you going here?
It doesn't matter what the rules are. Just enforce them the same, no matter what they are. Whether it's whatever it is. That's all we want. That's all any of us want. Just call it the same this week as you did last week, in this game as that game over there, and in the first quarter as it is in overtime. Just call it the same all the time. That's all anybody can ask for. And that's what they shoot for. That's all they ask.
I get it. Let's go to the tweet sheet, though. We've talked enough about officiating. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And what are you hoping to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the Combine? Jack says, I know he won't tell us the plan, but I'd like to hear hints of a direction for free agency. I would like to hear any insight on how they will adjust contracts for cap relief. Do they have any designs on trying to negotiate with either Poyer or Edmonds? Someone please ask him about wide receiver 2. All right, I'm taking notes here, Jack. I hear you.
That's right. I'm all that's right there. I agree. Who are they talking
those
to?
Are prominent topics.
They got to restructure some guys or cut some guys. And if they cut some guys, they're going to have to cut like 20 of them, right? But if they restructure them, maybe just two or three.
Right. So yeah, well, if they restructure the right ones with the biggest contracts, yes.
Well,
and they don't have to do 20 guys.
But the ones you restructure, the big guys, are the ones you don't mind guaranteeing the money to because you ain't cutting them anyway.
Right.
So,
Josh Allen, Von Miller,
Tre'Davious. Yeah, that's Steph.
Yeah, Steph. You got candidates.
Yeah, maybe.
And if you
do
the big guys, that would probably reduce the to-do list, you know, from 8 or 9 to maybe 4 or 5.
Right. Right.
So I would think that would be the preference, but of course, sometimes bigger contracts are more convoluted to, you know, rework. Right. But
and that's just to get under the cap. Forget about having money to spend on free agents.
Yeah.
You know,
just to get cap compliant.
Yeah, that's just to get compliant.
Let's go to Tank on the tweet sheet, who says, in terms of what he wants to hear from Brandon Bean, that we are going to sign Edmonds to a long-term deal. I don't hate that idea, but the cap implications are what make it sticky, not to mention the fact of what Tremaine Edmonds and his camp believe they can get on the open market. I mean, hypothetically, if the Bills say we value you at $16.5 million a year, and he and his representatives think they can get 20 on the open market, guess what?
Right.
He's going to hit the market and see what he can get. Now, maybe he's disappointed and he doesn't see those lofty numbers that he's anticipating. And then he does sit down and talk turkey with the Bills. Okay, well, then all is forgiven.
Well,
but
sure.
I'm not so certain that's going to happen. I think he's going to be in demand.
And you also got to know Bobby Wagner just got dropped onto the free agent market too. So all of a sudden
he's also 32 years old. Tremaine's 25.
All I'm saying is another all-pro guy is out there and might be a short-term alternative to a guy like Tremaine Edmonds, who is obviously a long-term solution for some team.
Right.
But that comes with its own cap implications. Certainly, I've told you, and I've said it on the air, I think the cap's going to spike big time next year, and it's going to go up maybe, what, it went up $16 million this year. I'll bet it goes up 25 or 30 next year.
You think it might double
the increase? Yeah, I think it might double the increase.
I could see 15 to 20, 30. Wow,
it was an 8% rise. It was an 8% rise, and they're still paying back the money they kept in the pool during COVID when it was going to go down to like 175.
Right.
It was going to drop. So they borrowed against that, and I think that is paid off this year. And if that is the case, you've got that increase plus increase. I mean, it'll be a double increase. So it could be like a 15
plus
to 20.
Plus plus.
That's right. That is right. You could get a 15 to 20% increase in the cap, which is big for a $250 million cap.
You get a lot of these teams out of hot water for sure. I already saw the Saints are signing people to extensions and reworking contracts. They got a lot of hacking to do with that axe.
Yeah.
So they already got started. They're not even waiting until combine week. They were getting started last week. It was pretty crazy. I don't know how they do it. It's like Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School trying to pull off the triple Lindy.
Yeah.
the Saints you know, do it every year.
Theoretically, it'll get to a point because the cap really doesn't seem like a real thing anymore, you know, because theoretically it's going to get to a point where you won't be able to sign anybody except unrestricted rookie free agents, and you'll have to have 53 guys with those contracts because you've got $200 million in dead cap.
Now let me ask you this. Do you think you ever get to a place, do you think an NFL team that, you know, has to jump through these fiery cap compliance hoops every year ever gets to a point where they say we're going to have 48 players on our active roster. But we can't afford, you know, 16 practice squad guys. We'll call up 2 guys every week and rotate them through. So we dress 50 on game day. And that's how we're going to do it. to save on the cap.
Well, they still only have 48 on game day.
Right, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You have a couple of injuries, you just do two practice squad elevations, and off you go. What do you think of that? I think we might get there, well, unless we get 20% maybe. 1 year, 20% the next year. And
I will say this.
That might stave it off.
I'll say this. I wouldn't renew my season tickets before that season started, because it's going to get ugly.
Well, the Saints might have that.
That's going to get ugly. I would not renew my season tickets before that.
I'm not worried about them getting under. I mean, they were 103 over last year and still got under. I don't know how they did it.
Two words, Brownie.
Whoever are the accounting wizards in New Orleans, they need a raise.
It's two words. It's cash flow. If you got the money to give it, you can do it. Sooner or later, it comes back
all
to
right.
you.
We got to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What do you need here? What do you need to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean at the NFL Combine this week concerning the offseason plans for your Buffalo Bills? We'll still take your tweets as well at One Bills Live, but otherwise, your phone calls next here at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Open line for you here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, we're back here on One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And on the Monday of Combine Week, Steve and I will be out in Indianapolis, effective tomorrow, Tuesday through Friday. We'll be broadcasting from the Indianapolis Convention Center, where the Combine will be taking place, along with Lucas Oil Stadium. And asking you today, let us know what you want to hear from Bills GM Brandon Bean concerning the offseason plan. Obviously, we know he's not going to lay out full details, but what would you like to hear from him to kind of encourage you about the offseason plan going forward? Got an open line for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. But we lead off this segment with Bob in South Carolina. What do you got for us, Bob? You're on One Bills Live.
Thanks, guys, for taking the call. We all know
sure.
Brandon's going to play. We all know that Brandon's going to play poker at the combine. We're not going to get a lot of information, but I would really like to know. Maybe you guys can help me. I'm a coach, and I look at it from that standpoint as well as a fan. But the offensive line, if we could find out where you could get the grades, pass run blocking, run blocking, for each of those five guys, and look at those grades and compare it to what's out in the free agent market, so that we as fans could have a look at what the Bills are, what they're thinking about doing based on their performances of these other players.
You mean the Bills' grades on their own guys?
Well, the Bills would know what their own grades are. They're not going to give that out to people, but can they find out the grades of the free agents at those positions and then compare it to what they have and then look at a free agent versus a Saffold,
which makes
more sense.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Bob. The best way to do that is go on the web and look it up for yourself, because there's no shortage of guys: CBS Sports, Fox analysts, CSPN, Pro Football Focus,
Pro Football Talk,
yeah. Pro Football Reference. They've got their own grades on all these guys that are going to be available, and they give the ups and downs.
I guess I haven't gone down the right rabbit hole yet, because I've looked and I found like the team rankings on the offensive line, the Bills were like number 12. So
right.
But that's about all I could find, and I'll just have to do some
more
digging.
The individual rankings are probably there if you dig deep enough, but the problem is one guy's individual ranking varies widely from everybody else's, and it's who you want to trust.
Yeah, and for right, offensive so. Line in particular, Bob, it's extremely subjective, because
right.
a lot of the guys out there on the internet that are doing it, they don't know what the play call is, because they don't work for the
right.
team. And so to grade right. some player, I don't have to tell you, being a former coach, to grade a player on a play and his execution when you don't know what the play call is a little misguided. I remember Eric Wood used to complain all the time. He was not a fan of, you know, these outside sources, you know, grading offensive linemen when they don't know what the
yeah.
play call is. So
yeah.
he had a big issue with that. So if you do find it, take it with a grain of salt. But thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's move along, and we go to Marie in Amherst. Let me pull her up here. What do you got for us, Marie?
Hey, guys. So I'm thinking with this first pick in this draft, I'm just going to go linebacker. Is Diane Henley, Washington State Cougars. I mean, you know, you want to save some money on the cap. They did develop Tremaine. Too bad they didn't want to trade him for Seattle's first-round pick and at least get something back for him. But, I mean, I go straight linebacker. You got Hyde and Benford in the back behind them at safety. You got Milano still there to groom him. This guy, this kid loves football. He's been very, very solid in his career at Nevada. Then he transferred over to Washington State. So I think that, Chris, you should talk to Bean and tell him to get over there and get this kid.
Yeah, it's interesting, too.
Okay.
You bring up a great point, Marie, because when they came in, they got Josh and Tremaine in the same draft. Am I right? They got Josh and Tremaine in the same draft.
They did.
So, and they traded up to get Tremaine and Josh. They traded up to get both of them.
Yeah, both
and
of them.
So, obviously, Sean McDermott, if not Brandon Bean, really thinks a lot of that spot in his defense. Maybe we're looking at this the wrong way. Maybe they are going to grab a guy to take Tremaine over, right, and take over his spot. Maybe it's that important that they spend a number one draft pick on a position that most of us don't think is valuable enough to spend that draft pick on.
I suppose it's possible. I don't think you have to use a first round pick on Diane Henley, because at least from the lists that I've seen, he's probably a guy that can be had on day three. Now, I could be way off with some of those rankings, but there's a lot of guys like first round linebackers. It's probably Trenton Simpson and maybe Drew Sanders. And I'm talking inside guys here.
Right.
There aren't many inside guys that go in the first round anymore at that position, because once again, not a super premium position in the eyes of most general managers and personnel executives. The premium positions are corner, wide receiver, pass rusher, left tackle, and quarterback, and wide receiver. So that's the modern day NFL. And I think the other positions, they don't necessarily fall by the wayside. Don't get me wrong. If the right prospect is there, they'll jump all over them if the value matches up with the spot where they're picking. But I think if teams had, I'll put it to you this way. If a team had a cornerback need and a linebacker need, and they had equal grades on a cornerback and a linebacker in round one, they're taking the cornerback.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's just a more valued position in the league because of all the throwing that goes on.
Right. I'm thinking, too, that you might be able to get a guy that is more closely related to a Tremaine Edmonds type, and a guy like a Jack Campbell or a guy like, you know, Mike Morris out of Michigan. Now, they're not as fast as a guy like Tremaine would be, but certainly they're kind of built like him, both tall and got a big reach. Because there's not too many guys, if any, that are like Tremaine. Tremaine was a one-of-a-kind athlete. A lot of guys that
are 6'2".
Yeah,
Drew Sanders at Arkansas is 6'5", 232, Steve.
Right. And a guy, you know, like there, then there's Andre Jones. He's 6'5", 250. But he's, you know, all these guys we're talking about, they run like 4.7s. Tremaine runs a little faster than that, you know.
Yeah. I think we're going to want to watch Drew Sanders run, the Arkansas linebacker. Some right. people are predicting low 4.5s. Tremaine ran a 4.53, I want to say, at the combine. And he had a mom who was his mom was a track star in college. So he knew how to run. Drew Sanders, some people are even saying, again, Arkansas linebacker, they're predicting a 4.53 for him.
Right. He's a 6'5", 230.
6'5", 232.
Yeah. Now, he's also his.
he might be there.
But here's the thing, and I know people kind of salivate over this. I don't know if he's an outside guy or an edge guy. He's best when he's rushing the passer. Mm-hmm. And Tremaine's okay at that too, but man, Tremaine's back there taking up space in the secondary. So I don't know I don't know that a guy like Drew Sanders is going to fit the skill set that they're looking for and the guy they want to run in this defense. But I mean, you know, that's not to say he can't. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, philosophically now, say there's a guy out there like these guys we're talking about that turn out to be exactly the kind of guy the Bills are looking for in that spot. And Tremaine walks. Do you spend your 27th overall pick on that guy?
I think I only do if I don't like the value at offensive line, I don't like the value at wide receiver, and I don't even like the value at tight end. Then, yeah, maybe I do it.
Right. I think
that's the only way I do it, though.
I agree. I think there's going to be an offensive lineman at 27.
Otherwise, I'm sliding back.
There's going to be an offensive lineman at 27. There's going to be a wide receiver at 27. One of those two is going to be there.
And maybe even a good tight end, too.
Yeah, tight end or a corner. So, or a safety.
Heck, even a safety, yeah.
So, I get that.
Get in line, linebacker.
Right, because back when they picked Tremaine Edmonds, they didn't have I didn't want to say it like this, but they didn't have nobody. They didn't have anybody. I mean, they needed some guys. And they needed a guy in there that would stand in that huddle and make some defensive calls and be a guy. And they got him. And he turned out to be that guy. Their needs list is far, far shorter now than it was in 2017 or 2018 when they took Tremaine. So I don't think that's a spot where I pick him, a guy that replaces him. I think you got to go offensive lineman or wide receiver or tight end or safety or corner. And I don't take an edge guy either. After the recent history, although if you keep taking them one time, you're going to get a good guy, difference maker, one of these guys. Because none of the guys they have, they've all been good, but you're always kind of looking at them like, gosh, I wish we were better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think, and I know we got to get to break here, but I think for some reason, I think year three is going to be big for Rousseau. I don't know why, but like much like you felt that year three was going to be big for Dawson Knox, and it proved to be. I don't know what it is, but I just feel like year three for Rousseau is going to be the tipping point.
Would it be nice?
And I know we all hope for that.
It'd be nice if year three was a big tipping point for Spencer Brown, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would certainly make the trenches look a whole lot better.
Yes, it would.
If you can get the week-to-week consistency from those two guys, for sure.
Rousseau has played well. He's been a good player for them. A very good
player.
Yes,
he has.
And if he takes a step
forward. That high ankle sprain kind of slowed him down.
If he takes
right in the middle of the season, I think it kind of compromised his trajectory last year.
If he takes it one step forward this year again, Rousseau, he's going to be everything they hoped he would be. If he takes another step forward,
I mean, he missed like three games and he still had 8 sacks.
Right.
All right, we got to take a break here. Some final thoughts on the tweet sheet when we return here on One Bills Live. All right, here we be back on One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, one segment to go. Some final thoughts on the tweet sheet. This one from Justin, who says, I'm hoping to hear Bean say they have another guy as good as Trey White, different position though, who was also picked round one, pick 27, which is the Bills pick with the Dolphins forfeited pick. I'll sign up for that. Yeah, you want to get me a guy the caliber of Tre'Davious White at some other position, maybe offensive tackle, guard, something? Yeah, give me some.
Yeah, any position you get, I'll take. Safety, I'll take, you know. Running back, I'll take. I mean, who cares? If you can get a guy that's good, has been as good or will be as good as Tre'Davious White is at what he does, count us all in.
Steve, safe travels, all right? You and Jay hit the road tonight. I will catch you there in the morning. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody, live from the NFL Combine in Indy.